Welcome to a TRL podcast. In this third instalment of our podcast series addressing the future of vehicle automation, we continue to ask how safe is safe enough? What do we need to do to get the driver out of the vehicle? And how do we meet the projected benefits of automation? And how can we ensure and maintain road safety? Again, we eavesdrop on a conversation between TRL experts. This time, we tackle the central question, when is safe enough?
I think there's two elements of this, the developing the capability of a system, and then, as well as discussed, there's validating that performance. And so I think we have some way to go, firstly, in developing a system that is capable of dealing with all of the scenarios that might come at it, and doing so 100% of the time, so that we no longer need a remote operator. And then there's actually knowing that we have developed a system that is capable of doing that. And that validation piece, obviously in-use monitoring will be key to that. But that validation piece is also likely to take a lot of time. If you start looking at being able to develop statistical significance or really validate your answers, I still think we have a bit of a way to go there as well. So,
is it likely that we'll see certain use cases and, you know, maybe a particular type of vehicle or a particular use of vehicle in a specific area rather than sort of widespread automation initially?
Can I jump in there? Yeah, so from my point of view, we've been working with the DFT on the first phase of an automated vehicle approval scheme. And that will be looking at low speed automated driving with, you know, specific vehicles, sort of pods and shuttles, but also offering a service to passengers or a goods service. And that's looking to be developed within the next 2 years. So with that approval scheme ready, we could feasibly look at certain, you know, types and use cases of automated vehicles within the next few years. Ultimately, though, I think there needs to be a big step forward in our understanding of safety. We need to really step up our amount of trials and testing, increase the data we can gather through in-use monitoring, so we can start to support that question. And it should be a question we continue to ask ourselves over time throughout deployment. And we should constantly be asking, is it safe enough? Can we take action to improve safety? And are we going to get to the sort of ideal safety performance and vision of zero fatalities that we want?
Will, you mentioned earlier about when these vehicles can get deployed on the road network and operational, that they're going to be operating a service. And I think this is one of the key things when it comes to the testing side as well, is you need to conduct a certain amount of testing in all different parts of the UK to gain that public acceptance and that public understanding of this type of technology. Because when we're asking that question, how safe is safe enough, essentially that answer is going to be answered by public. Their willingness to accept the level of safety that these new types of transport have on the public is going to have to be answered by the public themselves. So how can they answer that question when they don't know about the technology well enough? They don't understand it. They don't understand that how it's going to operate in that environment and how they are going to interact with it, how it's going to interact with them when they're another driver on the road. So I think that hammers home the need for that physical testing element as well, to showcase this technology to people, to get them used to that technology and experience it themselves. And it will start to set the scene in their mind about the benefits that this type of technology can bring to society as a whole. And it's not just a technology that's going to save corporations money in the future from operational and logistics costs, because essentially that's not going to be something society in large are going to be hugely interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. The public education and acceptance and engagement is crucial, I think, to ensuring not only that they understand the technology and the benefits that it could bring, but so they can understand why it's being implemented. What, you know, ultimately we need to tell them that there will be a safety benefit, and they need to understand how that's going to come about. in the future, there will be a collision involving an automated vehicle. There has been already in testing, but during deployment, there will be collisions involving automated vehicles. And you can imagine the amount of media outpouring, outcry, if an automated vehicle gets involved in a collision, especially a fatal collision. So really, there needs to be a strong evidence base to assure public, to assure regulators that it is actually safe, and it is demonstrating a level of safety performance that is in line with public expectation. And I think that is that whole basket of evidence, Camilla, that you were referring back to.
Absolutely. And I think people are more willing to accept some level of risk if there's a clear benefit. Mm. And I think it goes beyond members of the public understanding what the benefits could be for them. And it goes beyond that to actually asking members of the public, well, what are the benefits you'd like to see? What are the use cases and services that would enhance your life or enhance your community? What would make your life better by having automated technology? And I think having that input from different areas, rural, urban, and different potential user groups, really strengthens the benefits that we could see and the ability to be able to enhance people's quality of life. So with the question, how safe is safe enough? You know, we've spoken about members of the public and their need to accept the technology, understand the technology. But ultimately, this will be signed off by somebody, a minister or, how can we provide the evidence and what sort of evidence would be needed to answer that question and have ministerial sign off for the deployment of these vehicles?
I think today the number of the types of trials that have happened on the UK roads have been advanced in a way, but they've been basic to some degree, that they've had a safety driver in the driver's seat, and they've more just been operating in an environment to understand, can they just drive in that environment? Not a huge amount of trials to date have focused on that service aspect. So how are people going to interact with that vehicle, i.e. on board that vehicle, when there's not a driver in that driver's seat? And also there's not been a huge amount of trials to date where the safety driver has been taken out of that vehicle. So I think the next step to help answering that question is to be conducting further, more advanced trials where we're removing that safety driver. We're putting on services where members of the public are having more interaction with these vehicles. And once we get these more advanced trials on the public road and we're learning feedback and findings from these trials, that will really help answer that question, I think, on how we determine the safety.
I think I agree, Ollie. I think as well, engagement with regulators and policy makers is essential as well. They are ultimately going to be the ones that are setting that standard for safety performance. They're going to be telling us, based on the public's views, this is how you measure how safe is safe enough, and this is what the target threshold is going to be. So to do that, they need to have an incredibly detailed understanding of the technology, how it's going to work, how it will impact people's lives. And so that just reinforces the need for further testing, further understanding and research. You know, TRL have done a huge amount of research in this area, trying to develop that thought, that detailed understanding of automated vehicles. And this has been in support from investment by the government through various research and innovation schemes. So now it's time to start to leverage that insight and knowledge gained to enable policymakers to start making those sort of key decisions that enables deployment of AVs.
Ollie, what role do you see connected infrastructure having in helping us understand those interactions between automated vehicle and human driver? Because there are going to be some scenarios where the automated vehicle may not perceive a road user, and in which case we won't have data from in-use monitoring to know the automated vehicle did something wrong because it simply didn't perceive it. So how do you see connected infrastructure as tying into that?
Yeah, I think there's two sides. There's the connectivity piece and there's the monitoring piece as well. So the in-use monitoring that Will was talking about earlier. You've got in-use monitoring from the vehicle systems itself on how the vehicle is monitoring itself, or back-end systems are monitoring that performance. But then you also may need that third-party system monitoring as well. So potentially roadside infrastructure that is monitoring the movements of vehicles in certain locations and reporting on their performance. So that's sort of a monitoring aspect. You've also got the connectivity side there that can influence the operation of those vehicles. So it could be monitoring certain scenario and then reporting information back to a connected and automated vehicle to allow them to have a more efficient, a safer, a more smooth journey through that area. And the scenario I spoke about earlier about that mini roundabout, the three cars and the bus all having to navigate this scenario, I think if you introduce connectivity into that, as an automated vehicle approach that junction, you could alert that vehicle of a bus in particular hazardous locations or in an area that's going to cause a difficult scenario. And you can provide them with that prior warning so they don't necessarily put themselves in that scenario or that position where they then have to have a remote operator engage in their operation and intervene in their movements, essentially.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting as well to think about, well, what's the impact on everything else? So if you add, a few automated vehicles to, a bunch of manually driven vehicles, what's the impact on driver behaviour? How does that affect traffic flow? How does that affect the workings of motorways, for instance? You know, are people able to get onto the motorway via the slip? Does it impact the speed, congestion? Understanding then, if you increase the amount of automated vehicles, what happens then to the number of collisions or traffic flow? And I think it's quite interesting to not just look at the automated vehicle in isolation, but the interaction with other road users, including more vulnerable road users, cyclists, pedestrians, and how they then interact with one vehicle, multiple vehicles, and the impact on road safety.
I completely agree. And I think that's something that hasn't really been at the forefront of a lot of the testing that has been done so far. And it really drives home Ollie's point about making sure that the testing we're doing from this point is really representative of the environments, but also the services and that we're going to be running. Because that gives you that holistic data that you need to make those decisions, rather than, as you say, looking at a system in isolation.
I think over time as well, as these vehicles get deployed in greater numbers, you're going to start to have those interactions naturally through operation. So really having a means of collecting that data and understanding, what the vehicle perceived, how it interacted with another automated vehicle, and was the behavior safe, as well as all other types of road users, how they interact with every road user, I think is really a key question that you can only really answer once you start to have automated vehicles in the field and you start to have lots of interactions happening at all times, and you can start to collect that data.
I suppose it would be an interesting simulation as well to have, on the motorway, manually driven vehicles that are vaguely following the highway code, and pockets of automated vehicles that are strictly following the highway code, and understand what does that interaction look like. I think it would help prepare us for the future and be able to prepare infrastructure, signage, the behaviour rules that we're going to be applying to automated driving systems to understand what that interaction could look like.
It's interesting you said that, you'd have automated vehicles more strictly following the highway code. Now, of course, that is in line with traffic rules, but if every other user is not following the highway code, that strict adherence to the highway code rules then becomes unpredictable behavior for everyone else. So it's not just about following the rules, it's also about following the conventions and the standard driving performance of other road users. And I think that's probably got to be a key part of testing in the real world, Ollie.
It certainly does. And one thing we've recently done at SMLL is we've mapped the highway code on top of the road network around the SMLL facility. So where you have different rules from the highway code and where they're applied throughout our road network, we've sort of mapped that on top of the road. So you could in the future start sending that information to vehicles in advance. So as they're approaching certain locations, they can be aware of the stopping locations coming up, for example, or the speed limit changes. And definitely testing that interaction between that strict adherence to highway codes with other road users who don't necessarily follow it quite so strictly, because let's be honest, all road users probably don't know the highway code from front to back. Whereas an automated vehicle is going to have a digital copy on board and is therefore going to know all that information. So it is going to be an area for testing and understanding.
We will take a break here. In the next and final episode of our series, the team assesses how safe road trials are today. Thank you for listening.